He was still speaking when, behold, a bright cloud overshadowed them. And a voice from the cloud said, "This is my beloved Son, with whom I am well pleased. Listen to him." As I've pondered this familiar passage describing what is known as the Transfiguration, I find myself vacillating between befuddlement and gratitude towards Peter. You know, Jesus had taken Peter and the brother James and John with him up on that high mountain, and how often it is that the key moments in the scriptures take place on the high mountain. And it is as Jesus is praying there to the Father that he is transfigured before their very eyes. The veil is pulled back, and his eternal glory shines forth from every pore of his body. His face shining like the sun. His clothes dazzling whiter than any bleach could ever make them. And then on top of that, the two great figures of the Old Testament there beside him appear, Moses, Elijah. You know, Moses, that one who spent 40 days upon Mount Sinai in the cloud in God's presence, where he was given the law that was to guide, direct, instruct the people of God. Elijah, that great prophet of God who was God's mouthpiece to a rebellious and stubborn people. The same Elijah who confronted the prophets of Baal up on Mount Carmel. The same Elijah who heard the still small voice on Mount Sinai. And now both of these men who had encountered the glory of God upon the mountaintop are once again seeing his glory in the face of Jesus Christ of Nazareth. Luke tells us that they're having a conversation up there. Moses, Elijah, and Jesus are talking about Jesus' coming departure or exodus that he's about to accomplish at Jerusalem. You see, they're discussing Jesus' upcoming suffering, his death, and his impending resurrection. What a conversation that must have been, huh? Have you ever wished you could be the idiomatic fly on the wall? I'm sure all of us at some point or another wished we could be the silent observer listening in on some conversation that we think either salacious or intriguing or important. But it's here that my befuddlement towards Peter enters the scene. Because here he has the occasion to listen to the conversation of all conversations. But he just can't help from buzzing around. For some reason, he can't help but interject. You know, perhaps we might think that he just would like to bask in the glory there. I've basked in the glory the last couple days when the sun has finally come out, and I've gone on runs, and the sun's been out, and I've just stood there and let the sun just beat upon me. Peter, do you not just want to bask in the glory? Or perhaps he just wants to be quiet and listen. One might think that he would be too intimidated to speak in such company. Not Peter. There he is in the glory of God, in the conversation of conversations, and he interjects. I've been looking at some icons of this scene from the East, and one of my favorites depicts Jesus there on the mount, glowing, and then Elijah and Moses on the other side, and then down below we have the disciples, and they're depicted as almost tumbling. And my students in art and theology class were asking me, why are they like that? Why are they shown like tumbling? And I said, well, have you ever been to the beach and you're playing in the waves? And then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, some of you say, no, I live in Pennsylvania, but just imagine. All of a sudden, a wave comes out of nowhere that's 3 feet higher than any of the others. and the wave takes you under. Now, some of you have been there, and you're in it, you're tumbling, and you're wrestling, and you're under the water, and you're wondering, will I be able to come back up? And I think that's what the icon writers are trying to depict. They're tumbling in the midst of the glory of God. But my favorite is the one that has Peter raising his hand off to the side as if to say, don't forget me, I have a question, I have a question. Lord, it's a good thing we're here. Let us build a tent. I'll build three tents, one for you, one for Moses, one for Elijah. And I find it a little befuddling that his listening stops and his speaking begins. And yet, in a strange way, I'm also grateful. I'm grateful because he's showing us the affliction that we each face as human beings. You know, we might say that Peter is displaying symptoms of spiritual deafness towards God. And he's not alone in this malady of failing to sit at the feet of Christ. And indeed, ever since Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden chose to listen to a voice other than their Creator, all of us, we have the same problem in some way or another. Why is that? Why don't we listen to God? I've thought of four reasons. You might be able to come up with more, but I'll just share four briefly. Sometimes I think we don't listen because we are easily distracted by the cacophony of voices that are all around us. There were the unsuspecting sailors that hear the siren calls beckoning us toward rocky coasts. And unlike Odysseus, we don't put the beeswax in our ears. And it's so easy to become distracted. I had the joy of eating dinner with a bunch of high schoolers on Friday night during ski club, and just a wonderful group of kids. But what really struck me was, as we were eating, the dings, the buzzes, the bells, as the phones were just constantly going off in the midst of our conversations, and all of these outside things just interrupting, and videos and texts and all of these things. And I was pretty quick to begin to judge, and then I realized, am I any different? Do I not have the distractions that cause me to miss God's voice, that distract me? Sometimes we fail to listen to God because of the distracting voices. I've met other people who fail to listen to God because they just simply don't think they need to listen. We become haughty and arrogant. We think that our intelligence or our education or our philosophy or our money gives us all that we need to thrive in this life. And we can think, oh, that's fine. If you want to go ahead and listen to this Jesus, if he's actually even there, go ahead. But I'll be fine on my own. I have to say, I met more than a few people who had retired down to Beaufort, South Carolina when I was down there in ministry. They had made it. They had put up their 30 years in Western Pennsylvania or Ohio, and now they got to go where it was sunny all the time. And they then, for some way or the other, hit some obstacle that brought them to their knees. And I had more than one or two in my office that would just simply say, I came to the end of myself. And I realized I had been completely deaf to the words of life. Other times, it's our own voice that resounds so loudly in our minds that it drowns everything else out. The voice of self-doubt, the voice of failures that repeat. I'm not much of a male figure skater fan. However, if you've been following the Winter Olympics, perhaps you've followed this 17-year-old American prodigy figure skater, Ilya Malinin, the quad god, as he's called. He can do these, I guess, quadruple turns that no one else can do. Well, he was predicted to dominate the Olympics. He had been crushing all of the previous competitions, and he came into the Olympics the heavy favorite. And in the individual skate, the first round, it went off as expected. All of his years of training, all of his focus showed as he scored a dominating score. He went into the final round with, I think, an 8-point lead, which I have no idea what that means in figure skating, but I'm told it's a big lead. He gets into the final round, and everything goes sideways. The quad god can't even lands a triple or whatever it is. He ends up placing eighth. And it's just shocking. But what I was most struck by was an entirely vulnerable, self-aware interview that took place right after he got off the ice. Because he said that as he got into his opening pose, he was flooded with overwhelming nerves that he couldn't shake. Here's the quote. "I just felt like all the dramatic moments of my life really just started flooding into my head. And there were so many negative thoughts that just flooded into there. And I just did not know how to handle it." That's a 17-year-old. Maybe you know a little bit about that crippling voice of self-doubt that he couldn't quiet. The self-condemnation, the self-hatred that just seems to chirp away, sometimes at the most inopportune times. Sometimes we fail to listen to God because of competing voices. Other times it's our self-reliance or condemning self-talk. In Peter's case upon the Mount of Transfiguration, we're told that he didn't listen because he was afraid. The gospel author Mark writes that Peter did not know what to say, for they were terrified. And in his terror, he just speaks out. And sometimes we don't listen to God because we're afraid of him. We're afraid of what he might say in response to the way we're living. We're afraid that he might say something we really don't want to hear. We're afraid because we don't think that we are worthy to be in his presence. In the glorious, blinding, holy presence of God, Peter is afraid, and in his fear, his talking begins and his listening ends. That is until he is brought low and his ears are opened. Peter is still speaking when the bright cloud comes, the cloud of God's glory. And the voice says from the Father, "This is my beloved Son with whom I am well pleased. Listen to him." And it struck me this time as I was studying this passage that the Father interrupts Peter. He doesn't wait till he finishes speaking, and I rather like that. Because it's the Father's voice that's loudest. It's the Father's voice that comes in and cuts off all those other voices and points us right to his beloved Son and tells us and reminds us, listen to him. It's the booming voice of God, the Father, that resounds through the corridors of time. And his command and reminder is as much for those of us here in Grove City today as it was for those first disciples on the mountaintop in Israel. And it's for the person who does not yet believe. And it's for the new believer. And it's for the person who's walked with God for 5 years. And it's for the person who's walked with God for 50 years. Listen to him. You see, Jesus is God of God, light of light. When you're listening to him, you're listening to the one through whom all things were made. When you're listening to him, you are listening to God. He is light.
He is life. He's the author of creation. And the Father would have you to listen to Him. And yet, having worked with children and teens for some 2 decades now, it's been clear that often we don't want to listen very well. But if we are to listen, several things do need to be in place. At least if we're going to listen to the important things. If someone's going to listen to matters that can really get to the heart. We need to know that, one, the person who speaks knows what he's talking about. And two, we need to know that the person who speaks actually cares about us, loves us. So that's what a speaker has to have. What do we have to have in order to listen? Well, we have to have the humility. We have to have the posture that says, I need to listen. I'm reminded of that quip by Mark Twain who said, "When I was a boy of 14, my father was so ignorant I could hardly stand to have the old man around. But when I was 21, I was astonished how much the old man had learned in 7 short years. What is it that has shifted? The young man realizes he doesn't know it all. There is one who can help him in this road of life. That you might know that Jesus is authority, but that He loves you. And that you might be put in a position where you long to listen to Him. I'd like to move from one mountain with Jesus to another. The second mount is outside of Jerusalem. Once again, His glory, it's on full display. But the white robes are exchanged with bloodied, wounded flesh. And the face that shone like the sun is now etched in agony. Again, He's flanked by 2 men. But they are not the great prophet and lawgiver of Israel. They are 2 common criminals. There are all sorts of voices screaming at Him. Some of them yelling invectives and mocking. Some of them crying out, He saved others, let Him save Himself yourself if you are the Son of God. And yet Jesus speaks volumes, although very few words come out of His mouth. Father, forgive them. I thirst. My God, why have you forsaken me? It is finished. He's hanging upon the cross, upon that small hillside called Golgotha, because He loves you. Because He's taking upon Himself all the times that you and I have not listened to Him. Where we have gone onto the rocky shore following the siren calls. Or we have been proud and haughty, thinking we don't need to listen to Him. He's bearing our sins so that we will not have to. This is love. This is one who has authority. This is one to whom I want to listen. And I have us standing here on this second hill in hopes that our ears will be opened and our spiritual deafness healed. For as we stand at the foot of the cross upon that hillside, the siren calls begin to lose their appeal. And we find that all of the chirping are just leading to death traps away from Him. And it's here at the foot of the cross that our arrogance and our self-reliance is crushed. For He did this for us. And it's here at the cross when those voices of self-doubt and condemnation are quieted. Because He loves you enough that He went to that for you. and he's cleansed you. And as far as the east is from the west, so far has he removed his sins from you, that he took all of that condemnation and shame and he buried it in the deepest tomb. And it's here at the cross that our fear of being in the presence of a holy, mighty God is assuaged, because he has paid the penalty for our sin. And through his death, he has opened up the way for people like you and me to come into God's presence without fear, without shame. We are those who, as the book of Revelation described, are those clothed in bright white robes. Not white because of our internal and eternal light, but because they have been washed in the blood of the Lamb. And so it is through the cross that we hear, as the disciples heard, rise and have no fear. And what I would like simply for you to hear above all else is that if your ears are opened and you desire to listen to him, he still speaks. He still speaks from the cross. The beloved Son of God rose from the grave, and even now he sits at the right hand of the Father. And he speaks from the cross, but he has given us another key means to hear his voice. It was around this time, I don't know how many years ago, I think it was Valentine's Day, that my mother sent me a box while I was in the second half, my second semester of my senior year at Grove City College. And while all my friends knew what they were going to do, and they had jobs lined up, I was not one of them. And I was in a pretty deep state of denial, and I was frankly in a pretty deep state of depression, because I had no idea what I was going to do when graduation came. And I believe my mother recognized that. And she sent me a Valentine's box, and in it there was a book. And I have the book still. Knowing and Doing the Will of God by J.I. Packer. And I thought, perfect. I'm going to read this book and I'll know exactly what I'm supposed to do with my life. This is great timing. And I remember opening it up, and well, there was a Bible verse. And for each day of the year, and then Packer unpacked that Bible verse a little bit so that we could understand it. And I remember thinking, thanks, Mom, this is not going to do anything. And to my shame, I put it away, not realizing that God has given us a means to hear his voice. Peter points us right to it. In his second letter, Peter reminisces about his time on the holy mountain. He writes that he was on the holy mountain and he saw the majesty and the glory of Jesus and he heard the voice of the Father. But Peter realizes that you and I, we can't go up to the mountain right now. That we don't have the opportunity right now to see him transfigured. Nor do we have the opportunity to walk the dusty trails behind him, or to sit as he speaks by the Sea of Galilee. But Peter doesn't despair. Rather, he points to this sure thing that you and I have been given, the prophetic word. He said it's a more certain thing than even the voice he heard, which is shocking. The scriptures that he says are inspired by the Spirit of God, and he says we would do well to pay attention to them as a lamp shining in a dark place. And so, my friends, we are about to enter the season of Lent. And for many, many, many years, it has been in the life of the church a season of listening, of seeking to quiet the voices around us a little bit, and carve out some time that we might in humility sit and listen. That I might encourage you as you enter the season of Lent starting this Wednesday. Maybe it's carving out some time to go away with Dawn on the silent retreat and say, "Speak, Lord, your servant is listening." Or maybe it's putting away all of the distractions to the best that we can. And I don't know, start with Mark or Matthew and setting aside each day and open and say again, "Speak, Lord, your servant is listening." For he loves you. He desires to speak to you, to remind you that in him you are beloved, forgiven, and he will carry you through until that day when we too shall hear his voice afresh, "Rise, have no fear." And there he will be in all his glory. And we will bask in his presence forever. In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit, amen.